this podcast, we hope to equip our listeners with the best resources to help churches thrive. If you're looking at launching a thriving church in a rented venue, I encourage you to check out the team at Portable Church. Portable Church Industries equips churches meeting in alternative venues with total solutions so you can launch strong, be reproducible, and thrive in your communities. For over 25 years, they have partnered with church planners and multi-site leaders, mastering creative, intelligent, effective, portable church solutions so you and your team stay focused on the things that matter, building disciples. See what this looks like by visiting portablechurch.com/Lifeway.
Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network. Welcome back to the Group Answers Podcast Show. I am Brian Daniel with Chris Surratt.
What's up?
Well, welcome back. Another week.
Another week. I'm so excited about this week, though. I'm always excited about, you know, all of our episodes.
All of them.
This one is just
different.
Really special, cool.
Yeah. That's right. Well, let's go ahead and welcome in today's episode's today's guest.
Yeah. We have Andrew Peterson.
Wow. And
I know.
Do you have an applause button? There you go.
We should, but I'm so excited that Andrew is here. I was just telling him a story about when I first saw him in concert and just absolutely blew me away. But he's an award-winning singer-songwriter and author. The second book in his Wing Feather saga, North or Be Eaten, won the Christie Award for Young Adult Fiction. And the fourth, The Warden and the Wolf King, won Children's Book of the Year in 2015 from World Magazine. But in 2008, he's driven by a desire to cultivate a strong Christian arts community. Andrew founded a ministry called The Rabbit Room, which we'll talk to him a little bit about, which led to a yearly conference, countless concerts and symposiums, and a Rabbit Room Press, which has published 30 books to date. I had no idea it was that many books. He's been married for 24 years to his wife, Jamie, and they have three children. And his new book, Adoring the Dark, is both a memoir of his journey and an encouragement for artists, written in the hope that his story will provide practical tools to others stumbling along in pursuit of a calling to adorn the dark with the light of Christ. And I love the book. I read it as a pre-read, because I work here at Lifeway, and they're nice about that, and just loved it. So thanks, Andrew, for being with us.
Very glad to be here. Thank you, guys.
Andrew, you've been in the Nashville area for quite some time, right?
Yeah, 24 years, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, it's very much a part of the book and a part of the formation, and did you come not long after college, right? Or right out of college, maybe?
Yeah, it was like weeks after I graduated college. It was about halfway through college is when I put out my first like indie record and was beginning to play concerts. And so it was a matter of discipline to like stay there and get my degree before I came to Nashville. So I was just so ready to go. And so like the days after I graduated, my first thought was, all right, Jamie, let's pack up the U-Haul and move. So yeah, we came straight here with I think we had $2,000 in the bank from Jamie's teaching job. And we thought that was so much money. We were like, we were going to be fine for months and months, you know. But came here and immediately got a job at the Olive Garden. And I've been here ever since.
Well, those Olive Gardens are pretty automatic, aren't they?
it was a weird feeling to like go straight from college where I was playing music on a regular basis because, you know, I was in my home state and people knew me, and then moving to Nashville where nobody knew me and getting a job at the Olive Garden and then realizing that most of the other people who worked there were also musicians with indie records in their trunk, you know? And so it was a scary feeling, but it was also one of the best things I ever did.
Yeah, when I moved to Nashville, I guess it's been a little over 10 years now. Every time we went to a restaurant, we just assumed that the waiter or waitress was an aspiring artist. And probably about half the time it was true.
Yep. It's a safe assumption.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's easy to be cynical about it, but it's actually a beautiful, like there's something so kind of like contagious about the idea that so many people come here with this, you know, wild hope that they're going to be able to make something beautiful. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Make a living putting beautiful things in the world and telling stories. And so, you know, it would be easy to think of Nashville as this kind of city where everybody's networking and greasing the wheel. But if you look like a layer deeper than that, or if you put a better frame on that, it just means that it's a city full of poets and storytellers and musicians and people who have this gift to try to make the world beautiful. And, you know, there's a shadow side to all of that, but there's also a really bright, beautiful side to it that I love.
Yeah, I love that things are just being created every single hour of the day that's going to impact the world, you know, not just the United States, but man, it goes everywhere. And I know that Nashville is mainly thought of as the country music capital, and it is, but there's every genre of music, of art, it all exists here. And it's so fun to watch what's going on in our community. And speaking of community, you know, you as an artist have done a great job of building community. Both Brian and I are big literature fans, and so obviously Tolkien and Lewis, and you've created something called the Rabbit Room. Tell us a little bit about why that came about and why it was important for you to build a community of artists.
Well, it was it's interesting. It was like in the beginning, we didn't really build a community of artists. We just realized that we were a part of one. That it had very organically kind of built around us. There's a lot of ways to tell the story, but the way that I'll choose now is that we were, and when I say we, it was this group of singer-songwriters, some of whom, you know, your listeners would probably know, quite a few of whom have like really strong fan bases, but aren't like, you know, household names by any stretch. But we were all, we all kind of found each other because of the kind of music that we played. Like, it wasn't typical CCM music. It wasn't worship music. It was overtly Christian, but it was also very singer-songwritery. And we realized that because of the trends in the Christian music industry, worship music was taken off and was just kind of pushing storytelling type songwriting to the margins a little bit. And so there were quite a few of us who, you know, our stories are very different, but many of us had been on labels and had been dropped by labels or had booking agents. But then when the industry changed, we lost that stuff just kind of realized like we aren't going to survive as professional artists at this point, unless we help each other. And because we all still felt a pretty solid call from the Lord to do this one kind of thing, you know? And so we locked arms and decided to give a name to our little community. And so it wasn't so much that we said, hey, let's form a community. It was like, let's actually pay attention to the community that is already around us and lean into it and see what happens. And so that eventually became the Rabbit Room. And so, and the reason it was called the Rabbit Room was because my first time in Oxford, I went to I think most C.S. Lewis nerds or Tolkien nerds go to the Eagle and Child, which is one of the pubs that they used to hang out in. And something about that trip, the name of the room in the pub was the Rabbit Room. And being there reminded me that the Oxford Inklings weren't so much different from our little group of Nashville songwriters. It was like a group of people who were Christians who had a certain kind of love for a certain kind of art or storytelling, and that love brought them together. And as a result, not only did the friendships flourish, but the art that they were making flourished because of those friendships. And so that's kind of the heart behind the Rabbit Room.
So the Rabbit Room, according to your bio, was about 12 years ago, and I'm sure it was percolating before then. And then, so I think we've established that you came to Nashville about 23 years ago, give or take. So the Rabbit Room comes about in the middle of that, it feels like, about 10 years in. So
yeah.
I would be interested, and I think our listeners would be interested knowing about community. There's something uniquely interesting about artist and community, but that ideology, that ethos of course, transcends art and gets into just what it means to be human. So could you tell us just in your story and just in your experiences, why, how would you answer the question, why is community important?
Huh. That's a good question. Well, I think one of the first things that pops into my head is that the local church was God's idea. It's like built into, you know, what it means to be a Christian is this idea that we need each other and that we need each other to tell each other the story of the gospel on a regular basis. And so I think that the church is the first place where community is modeled as like a recipe for one of the God's intentions for what it means to be human, is to live in community with people gathered around this reminder of who God is and who we are in Him. And so the church is a good picture of that. I think that the reason it matters so much to me, is that I am pretty, I have a lot of fear of being alone. Like I'm a 4 on the Enneagram. And I don't know if you guys pay attention to that stuff or not, but one of the things that I recognize in my own story is this need to be unique, this kind of broken need to feel special, coupled with a longing to belong with people. And so I've always wished that I could be like, or had a tendency to feel left out, you know, feel like the circle is closed and I'm on the outside of the circle. And so one of the ways that God has redeemed that in my own story is that I have, without meaning to, typically built community around me. Like, because I'm afraid of being alone, I'm afraid of being left out, I end up being the one who instigates the guy movie night, or, you know, if I'm going to go on tour, like I've always tried to go on tour with other people. Like, I just like the idea of not being alone on the road, having a tour manager, but also a band and also an opener. And so I can't tell you how many times I have told my wife, "Hey, I just feel like going to see this movie tonight." And I'll end up texting a couple of friends and saying, "Hey, you want to come to the movie? Hey, so-and-so should come to the movie too. Oh, so-and-so needs that." Just as a like born out of this broken desire that I have to not be alone, I end up going and realizing that there are 12 people on the row at the theater with me. And so I think that's part of it, is that God is redeeming my brokenness. And that ends up being a part of my contribution to our community in Nashville, is that I'm the gatherer, you know, sometimes. And so what I realized though, is that there are all these good things come out of connecting with each other. I think one of the things that the enemy likes to do is to isolate us. And so community is one of the best ways to push back at that. And humans just flourish in community. And we're living in this age with a fracturing of community, a deep loneliness, which is an irony in light of the social media and this illusion of connectedness that we have. And so, yeah, the rabbit room and a lot of my life has been a practice of pushing back at my tendency to be alone by building community around myself. And so, again, the church is the perfect answer to that question.
Yeah. You've also done it through the Behold the Lamb of God tour. I mean, it feels like a community experience. You know, I've been in, it doesn't feel like the Andrew Peterson show. It feels like a community of people doing it together. Was that the purpose behind it? Is that how you're able to kind of stay consistent in community on the road, is by doing things like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think I've always tended to look for the gifting in the people around me. Like, you know, coming up with like a harebrained scheme, like, oh, what if we were to do this kind of thing, whether it was the Rabbit Room or the Behold the Lamb show or the Easter tour that we do now. I tend to have some harebrained idea, and then I have like this radar that's always scanning the horizon for people whose gifting might help augment that vision. And so I remember, it's funny, I haven't really talked about this before, but in high school, I lived in Lake Butler, Florida, which is the smallest, it's in the smallest county in Florida. And so our high school was very small, but I wanted to play music so badly and didn't have enough friends who also played music. But I would talk them into learning instruments so that they could be in my band. So like I would drive 30 minutes into the countryside to pick up my friend Trey and drive him back to the church fellowship hall and teach him to play bass so that we could cover a Bryan Adams song, you know? And so it was like this constant looking for, oh, I bet you would be good at this. Why don't you try this thing? And why don't you try this thing? And I think that part of Behold the Lamb of God was like that. It was like, I had this crazy plan that I knew I couldn't do alone. And that just shifted my way of moving through my day. I was constantly going, who can I invite into the story? Who can I ask to help me do this thing? Which is sorry if I'm talking too much, but one of the questions that we get often in the rabbit room about community is like, you know, people go, congratulations, you live in Nashville. There's tons of artists in Nashville. What do? I live in fill in the blank town. And my answer is usually that one of the best ways to build a community of artists or just a community in general is by doing something, like start doing the work, like, ask yourself, what is a beautiful thing that I can put into the world? And once you start down the road of trying to do something that is beyond your ability to do, you realize quickly that you need help and you need people. And you look up by the time the thing is finished, you look around you and you realize that you've made lots of friends that you didn't have before. So the project itself ended up being the flag in the ground that drew people around it. And I think that's one of the best ways to discover community is to start just doing work that is bigger than you can do alone.
Chris, it's an interesting relationship between calling and community, the way Andrew's laying it out. Someone who admittedly enjoys the company of people, yet strikes out on his own to come to Nashville and then develops community, but he didn't let that get in the way of a calling, which is, I think, just is beauty in and of itself, which is as good a segue as any. Andrew, I'm holding a copy of Adorning the Dark. This is a great title, a great cover. You and the team just did a wonderful job on this. So the full title is Adorning the Dark, Thoughts on Community, Calling, and the Mystery of Making. My daughter is I talk about on the show a lot, my daughter's an architect major at the University of Tennessee, and she's introduced me to this cult, this makers community and culture, which is just a wonderful idea, the way at least to see it through her eyes. So just wondering, just as we get into the book, how long has this book been in the making? This released last year, 2019. How long has this been like on your heart?
I think 3 or 4 years probably is how long I've been wondering. You know, you feel like an idiot writing a memoir, you know, it feels like the most pretentious thing you could do is to go, my story is so interesting that I'm going to write a book about it. So it took me a long time. I had an inkling of an idea, but it took, the light bulb going off that what I wanted to do was to encourage people. And so, once I realized that I didn't want to just tell my story, but that my story could be material for, hopefully giving courage to other people, that gave me like a little bit of, grounding to the idea of what it would mean to write a book. So I kicked it around for years before I got busy and started looking back at my journals and looking at writings that I'd already written and began to cobble them together into what became the book.
Was there a trigger or a prompt that set it into motion finally?
Yeah, the biggest one was going into the studio for an album called Light for the Lost Boy several years ago. And it was, I was just really unprepared when I went into the studio. Like, you know, the dates on the calendar and the producers there and the musicians are there. And it's up to you as the artist to do your homework, you know, and you got to show up with a direction and with some songs. You don't have to have all the songs necessarily, but I showed up and felt just, like, you know, I had been faced with some writer's block and was very unsure of myself and didn't know. It's like every time you go in to make a record, I start from scratch and I go, how does this work again? you know, there's no way this is going to end up beautiful because, you know, these little measly ideas, how could they possibly become songs that are going to be worth listening to? And all the insecurity, everything. So I went into the studio and as a way of greasing the wheel and kind of fighting back at the writer's block, I started keeping a journal, a daily journal that was very confessional and was also where I prayed, asking Jesus to help me about what was going on inside my heart in the recording process. And it was very honest about like the fear that I carried with me in it. And so that was the thing. It was like a few years later, I looked at that journal and I was like, I don't know that I've ever read a book on the creative process that was as confessional as this, about not just like practical tips. There are plenty of those, but there weren't very many that just reminded me as an artist that I wasn't totally crazy for feeling these things. And so that was the thing that got me going.
Andrew, one of the reasons I love this book is I consider myself an artist. I was a professional musician for several years of my adult life. And so, I love the process that you walk through, how you write songs. And, man, I so related to being up at 2 a.m, 3 a.m, just, you know, working on an idea for a song. And, man, that resonated with me. And just I love reading books like this where I just learn the creative process. What would you say to somebody, because I think a lot of people don't consider themselves as creatives or artists, even though they are, and they, you know, but how would somebody read this book if they don't consider themselves a creative artist?
Yeah. One of the main like themes of the book is this idea that one of the ways that we bear the image of God is that we are all inherently creative creatures. It's one of the fundamental things that makes us human is that we make stuff and we speak light into the world. And it's a very Tolkien idea, but it's also a very scriptural idea. The first thing we know about God in scripture is that he is creative, right? In the beginning, God created. And so, you know, a few verses later, we're told that we were made in his image and likeness. And so, There's something about us that is like God, and Tolkien would argue that one of those things is this burning, like undeniable urge to shape the world around us. Wherever we go, we shape the world around us, and that is creativity, and that's why I take issue with the language of creatives. Like when people talk about themselves as a creative, I can't stand it. It sticks in my craw in a bad way, because I just think it ends up drawing a line in the sand and implying that there are some people who are creative and other people who are not as special, you know? And I kind of want to be like, no, and part of the reason I'm defensive of it is that I live in Nashville, and yes, I live in a city full of artists and poets and authors, but you know, most of my neighbors and the people I go to church with are architects or teachers or pastors or counselors. And to imply that their lives are any less imbued with the creative image of God is a disservice, I think. And so one of the things that I try to impress on people in the book is this idea that one of the things that we're called to is to look around us and ask ourselves, how do we speak light into the darkness on a regular basis? How do we invite God's kingdom into not just the book that we're writing, but the sermon that we're writing, or the building that we're building, or the lesson plan that we're working on, or the living room that we're designing, or the placement of the couch? You know, all of these things are little pictures of this beautiful drive that we all have to make the world around us more beautiful.
I think you may have already answered this question that, but I'm going to ask it anyway, because I think it's so important for everyone to see themselves as more than what they are, or as more than maybe even how others see themselves. I think that's, in terms of the way you put it, Andrew, was as a creative, because to be an image bearer is to represent some aspect of creativity. But specifically, in terms of, and this is in the subtitle of the book, there's a reference to calling, which is something that is not the most accessible term for a lot of people that would consider themselves disciples. So how does our calling as Christians intersect and inform the quote-unquote great mystery of creativity that you just that you just described?
Well, calling is a tricky one. It's funny, as I worked on the book and I talked about calling and have discussed it with folks like you guys, I realized how little I really know about it. It's really hard for me to articulate what I mean by it. And part of that is because I have in my own life, felt a very specific calling when I was 18 or 19 years old. I talk about it in the book. I felt like I'd been given a certain kind of gifting, tendency to play music and write stories and draw pictures and to build, you know, friendships and community around me, that kind of thing. It all came naturally to me. And when I was 18 or so is when I really was, you know, went from being a nominal Christian to being someone who actually, couldn't deny anymore that Jesus was who he said he was. And I remember in that season, just kind of, in tears asking God, like, this story has changed me so much. Will you please let me tell other people about this story? And if I can use my music, or my love of storytelling to try to wake up in people the same thing that some of the stories have woken up in me, then that's what I want to do if you'll let me. And so, there have been many, many times. I was just talking to my daughter about this a few nights ago, that I've had occasion again and again to want to quit or to be confronted with like some huge discouragement, you know. And I talk about some of it in the book, having been dropped from publishing deals or dropped from my record label, or, you know, like seasons where my wife and I were not sure how we were going to make it financially, you know. So plenty of parts of my story like that, where I had to like regroup and ask myself, does the fact that I was dropped from my label, my first record label, does that change my calling? Does that change, what it is that I asked God for when I was 18 years old? And I always came down on the side of no, like those things aren't necessarily indicators that I'm barking up the wrong tree, you know? And I think from a calling standpoint, like the hard thing, especially, you know, my kids are 20, 21 and 17. And so they're at that stage in their life where they're beginning to like really have to make some big decisions about what it is that they're going to use their gifting for. How are they going to serve God and, in very specific ways. And I think one of the things is you go do the thing you want to do, and then you hit the inevitable closed door, you know, and we always go, okay, what, how do we know if a closed door is God closing the door? And how do we know if it's the enemy, right? How do we know if this is just part of the deal, that the world is broken and there's going to be thorn and thistle in the ground that we're trying to till. And how do we know when to quit and when to push through? And I think that's where community comes in. I think you look at the gifting that you've been given and you ask yourself, how do I serve God and build his kingdom with this gifting? And I will do that until I hit a closed door. And that's when you turn to your community and you go, help me see, is this closed door something that I need to kick down? Or is this God saying, hey, maybe you should do something else? And that's been my experience again and again. Whenever I've hit those walls, there have tended to be friends or pastors or somebody who gently picks me up and says, don't forget who you are. This is your calling. This is your gifting. Keep going. Like, keep writing songs. I need your songs. Keep writing them. And so I think for me, it's been a little more black and white because I felt like I'm not very good at very many things, you know? And so my only hope is like, if the music thing and the book thing and this kind of ministry doesn't work, I really would be at a loss to know how to carry on. And so does that get at the answer to your question? I don't know if it really does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's really good. I happened to read your book when I was going through a pretty tough time in my life. And what you're talking about was exactly where I was at. And it was inspiring to kind of read how you walk through those trials and those times when you thought maybe I should give it up or do something else or walk away from it. And man, it inspired me. It really did. And to lean into Jesus more and to know that I have a calling on my life. And so, man, that's so good.
Yeah, I would just add to that calling and creativity are very high-minded, heavy-handed concepts, and a 30-minute podcast maybe not the best form for that. So, but I would encourage everyone to pick up Adorning the Dark Thoughts on Community Calling and the Mystery of Making by Andrew Peterson. It is new, really. It hasn't even been out a year yet. So pick that up anywhere you can buy books. So Andrew, thank you for being with us today. I appreciate the time. I know you have quite a bit going on.
I'm so glad to talk to you guys. Yeah, thanks for asking good questions. You got me thinking.
Hey, that's encouraging.
We try.
Well, that's going to wrap it up this episode of the Group Answers Show. I'm Brian Daniel, and this is Chris Surratt. I would encourage you to go anywhere that you do listen to podcasts and subscribe or leave a comment. We enjoy getting those, and they do make a difference, and the ratings certainly make a difference.